The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Greetings, everyone. I'm Jennifer Green for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is That's a Laugh. For the next half hour, I'll be reading excerpts of funny stories, quotes, and other anecdotes from various sources that we hope will add a few chuckles to your day. This month's TAL episode celebrates moms everywhere. From the book, Never Buy a Raccoon at a Gas Station, Life Lessons for Children of All Ages. Written by Beth DeJens, copyright 2019, the chapter, That's Not a Monkey on Your Back. Some of our family's funniest and most unforgettable memories are thanks to Bandit and his hilarious personality. There's a saying that goes something like, you can take the girl out of the country, but you can't take the country out of the girl. I believe the same is true of domesticated wildlife. In Bandit's case, at least, we took the raccoon out of the wild, but we never took the wild out of the raccoon. Deep down, we all had a feeling that Bandit's time with us might be limited. The years that he lived inside with us weren't nearly long enough for Dad and me, but for Mom and Laura, it was just fine. As much as we loved his company, and he loved ours, domesticating wildlife is not always the best idea. Sure, he was house-trained and kept himself quite clean. He drank out of the dog's water bowls, ate when they ate, played in the yard with the other animals, and even slept in my bed. In so many ways, it was like having a very playful cat or exceptionally agile dog. But he reminded us in so many ways that he was still a wild animal with different drives and ideas about house life. The traces of wild instinct that lingered in Bandit broke through at the most random times. The first time we caught him washing his food in the dog's water bowl was one of those moments. It wasn't expected at first, but then it made perfect sense. Of course, raccoons wash their food in the wild. We just didn't expect to see it happen in our house. I've often wondered if his pranks were the result of instinct more than mischief. But then I remember the twinkle in his eye and what looked for all the world like a smile every time he played a prank, and I think otherwise. The other indicator of intentional mischief was the way Bandit singled out my mom as his favorite target. He had to know that she cared about him. After all, Mom was about the nicest, most generous person I've ever known, even to animals who probably belonged outdoors. I think he picked up on the fact that she wasn't on board with a raccoon living under her roof, and either wanted to win her over or wanted to make her regret it. Or maybe he was just a scamp. One of the funniest examples of Bandit's wild instincts breaking through is the day he welcomed my mom home from the grocery store by leaping from the curtain rod onto her back. The next few minutes are a bit of a blur because everything happened so fast, but to the best of our recollection, it went like this. Bandit loved to be up high, at the top of a tree, riding on our shoulders, lying on the back of the couch, or, on this fateful day, perched on a curtain rod right beside the front door. Mom was well aware Bandit would likely be in the house when she got home, but I doubt she expected what happened next. Bandit was indeed in the house. In fact, he had heard Mom's car pull in the driveway and had quickly scaled the curtains to sit in wait at the end of the curtain rod, as close as possible to the door she was about to open. After a long day of teaching middle school, Mom had stopped by the store for groceries so she could rush home to make dinner for the family. Dad was outside feeding the horses and goats. Laura and I were supposed to be upstairs in our rooms doing our homework. Instead, Laura was in her room, and I was in the living room, half-heartedly practicing for my weekly piano lesson, when the front door opened. What immediately followed was a blood-curdling scream, the likes of which none of us had ever heard. Laura and I dropped everything and ran toward the commotion, not sure what to expect. When we rounded the corner, the first thing we saw was a heap of groceries on the floor, bursting from the broken seams of brown paper grocery bags. As apples and grapes, Bandit's favorite, rolled to a stop at our feet, Mom screamed, "Ah! Get this creature off of me!" But Mom was long gone. As we ran into the kitchen, we saw two things. First, we saw Mom running faster than we knew she could, circling the kitchen table over and over as her arms flailed to shake the delighted prankster off her back. Then we saw the look on Bandit's face as he clung onto her jacket for dear life, looking for all the world like a rodeo rider. He grinned from ear to ear as he finally jumped off her back to the kitchen table and then to the floor. That's when the real chase began. Bandit noted the direction in which Mom was running and headed her off, so she had to change course with him in hot pursuit, practically on her heels. He obviously meant no harm behind a fun game of chase, but Mom was not convinced. They must have run around that table a dozen times before Mom gained enough of a lead to break off in the direction of the stairs. Laura and I followed close behind, uselessly calling Bandit to come. He was having far too much fun to stop now. Mom climbed the stairs two at a time, and Bandit took three. By the time she reached the top of the stairs, he was just a step or two behind. Mom had a decision to make: turn right at the top of the stairs and take refuge in the master bedroom, or turn left and risk making it all the way down the hallway to the bathroom. She opted for the bedroom since it was closest and slammed the door in Bandit's face just as he leaped after her. Not to be deterred, Bandit frantically scratched at the bedroom door while Mom continued screaming for help. By the time Laura and I got upstairs, Bandit was sitting on the floor outside the door, scratching and smiling for all he was worth. I scooped him up into my arms and scolded him for what he'd done, but I'm sure he didn't regret it for one second. If it's possible for a raccoon to laugh, I am 100% certain that Bandit laughed all the way to the back door. That was the day we built Bandit a treehouse, and he became an indoor-outdoor raccoon. Yes, when Mom walked in the door that day, she probably expected lots of things, but a raccoon pouncing onto her back from the curtain rod was almost certainly not among them. I believe after that day, she always made it a habit to look both ways and, perhaps most importantly, to look up. Bandit's lesson. It wasn't news to us that Bandit was a wild animal, no matter how long he lived in the house. But that day, Bandit taught us an important lesson on awareness. When Mom walked through that front door, I'm sure she had no idea at all that Bandit was sitting above her, ready to pounce. We all learned how important it is to always be aware of your surroundings. Living at our house was a constant exercise in expecting the unexpected and rolling with whatever came our way. Also from Beth Dejen's book, the chapter Open Door, Insert Raccoon. During the years that we had Bandit, we lived in Virginia, near my mom's side of the family, and most school holidays were spent in Florida with my dad's side of the family. It was a long drive, but it kept us close to both sides of the family. And who doesn't love a good 12-hour road trip in a four-door sedan with four people and two dogs? Do the math. It's not pretty. Since the disaster of his first road trip with us, Bandit had never been invited on a second. He ran quick errands in the car with us, but none of us wanted the drama of his company in the car for another full-on road trip. Instead, Bandit had stayed at home with free access to his treetop wooden house Dad had built for him, enjoying the comfort of the small barn where the goat stayed, along with wherever else he wanted to roam. We always left him a supply of food and treats in the goat barn, along with fresh water, though I suspect he preferred the stream behind the house. One hot summer night, our family had just pulled into our driveway from a long summer vacation in Florida. We were all exhausted, cranky, and desperate to get inside and sleep in our own beds. As soon as the car stopped in the driveway, Dad practically leaped out of the passenger seat to unload the trunk, while Laura and I gathered our assortment of trip supplies into what would hopefully be one trip from the car to the house. Dad had the same rules for unloading that he had for loading. It was pretty simple. If you wanted your stuff to go on the trip with you, it was your responsibility to bring your suitcase, one per person, out to the car. Each suitcase was placed by the trunk, but not in it. Packing the trunk was an intricate game of Tetris that Dad had mastered years before someone translated trunk packing into a video game. The same was true of the unpacking. Dad unloaded it all from the trunk and put it on the ground by the car for us to take our own things inside. If you didn't bring it inside, it stayed outside. Laura and I were arguing over who should have to take the blankets inside since I had used them last. We were trying to find the Simon game, whose beeping was coming from somewhere under the seat. Simon was an awesome handheld game, a pioneer in the electronic games industry, that had four colored sections, red, blue, green, and yellow, that would light up in a particular pattern. The goal of the game was to repeat the pattern by pushing the colored buttons in the right order. Looking back, it was a simple game, but without more interesting electronics to compete for our attention, it was entertaining enough to keep us mostly agreeable for hours at a time. It likely had an entirely different effect on our parents. Between the noise of Simon's persistent beeping, our arguing, Dad's unloading instructions, and Mom's peacemaking, it was a real scene. Dad had taken a load inside the house already, and had, on the same trip inside, moved the dogs in from the car to the house. Laura was headed inside with a load of her stuff. We were each allowed one suitcase and one car bag, though Dad had made an exception for Laura's caboodle. In the 80s, every girl had a caboodle to organize the myriad hair scrunchies, makeup, and big, brightly colored acrylic jewelry. As Laura headed upstairs to her room with her suitcase, caboodle, and purse, the dogs headed back outside and immediately started barking as if their lives depended on it. Mom had driven the last part of the trip and, I'm sure, couldn't wait to get inside and go to bed. About the time the barking dogs charged toward the car, she opened her car door for some fresh air, you know that familiar road trip smell, and leaned across the front seat to the passenger floorboard to retrieve her purse and the family snack bag. A moment later, Mom threw both hands up in the air and let loose a blood-curdling scream. Snacks flew in all directions as the rest of the family ran to see what had caused the scream, which was still going strong. I'm not sure how she managed a breath between the screams. Since the dome light in the car was turned off for the trip, Dad had to grab a flashlight from the trunk to see what in the world was happening. As our eyes adjusted to the dark and to the flashlight's beam, there sat Mom with her hands up in the air, screaming. She was face to face with Bandit, who was sitting in her lap with his hands up in the air, just like her. One of Bandit's favorite greetings was to stand up on his back feet with his two little front feet in the air. He'd make a happy little squealy, chirpy sound as if he were trying to say, "Hi there, I really missed you." I guess he had really, really missed us, because that was one doozy of a greeting. When Bandit saw us and the barking dogs, he hopped out of the car and up into my arms. It's a miracle he didn't trigger his defense mechanism all over me as the dogs barked, Mom screamed, and Dad doubled over, laughing. I don't remember how long it took for Mom to regain her composure enough to climb out of the car. I'm sure she was instantly wide awake, though. And from that day on, she always, always looked to see what was on the other side of her open car door. Bandit's lesson. After such a long and crowded road trip, I'm quite sure Mom never expected the greeting she got in the driveway that night. In your wildest imagination, would you expect a raccoon to jump into your car and onto your lap? Bandit taught us all never to underestimate what might be hiding just out of sight. It might be something amazing that you never knew was coming. A long-lost friend, or unexpected job opportunity, or it might be a raccoon in your lap. One more story from Beth DeJens. The chapter, Bandit the Surprise Teddy Bear. While Bandit lived in the house with us, he was free to come and go as he pleased, but he usually chose to be in the house with us. He learned by watching our two dogs and scratched on the door to go outside for bathroom breaks. He sort of walked on a leash when necessary, and he napped on the couch or in the bed, snuggled under blankets like a real live teddy bear. Bandit wore a collar, got regular baths, mostly initiated by him. He loved playing in the water, and developed relatively good manners. Most days, he and I would walk down to the creek behind our house for him to hunt frogs, crawfish, fish, and anything else that looked appetizing to him. Like all raccoons, he washed everything he ate and took a great deal of pride in his appearance. He would sit for ages in the creek, washing his adorable little face and hands. When it was bedtime, he went outside with the dogs for one last bathroom trip before trotting upstairs to my room. By the time I'd brushed my teeth and gotten ready for bed each night, Bandit would be all curled up in my bed, sound asleep. Raccoons are soft and snuggly bed buddies, but there's one big problem. They're nocturnal. So, every night, Bandit would catch a quick power nap with me, and then he was ready to explore. We quickly learned how important it was for me to keep my bedroom door closed. At least that way, Bandit's adventures were confined to one room. I was a sound sleeper, so I didn't mind. In the morning, I got to pick up all the stuff he'd pulled out to play with. By then, Bandit would be back in bed, sound asleep. One night, when I got into bed, I noticed Bandit wasn't there. Figuring he must be outside with the dogs, I lay down with a book and waited for him to come to bed. I must have dozed off, because the next thing I remember was Mom's scream, what became known as her bandit scream, coming from her bedroom. I jumped out of bed and raced in that direction, meeting Dad and Laura on the way. We arrived at the master bedroom just in time to see Mom crouched in the corner screaming and Bandit standing up on the foot of the bed, chattering furious at her. He looked like a tiny furry preacher in the pulpit as he furiously bobbed up and down, waving his tiny fists in the air. To fully appreciate the scene we walked into that night, you should know a bit more about Mom's relationship with Bandit. First of all, my mom is the kindest, gentlest soul who has ever breathed. She loves all people and all animals. But she also has enough common sense to recognize that some animals do not belong in the house, or the car for that matter. Ever since their road trip introduction, Bandit seemed to sense her reservations about having a raccoon for a pet. Instead of trying to win her over, however, he seized every opportunity to torment her with his pranks. I'm not sure if he thought it was a game that he won every time he was able to produce Mom's hallmark bandit scream, or if he just delighted in making her jump and run. Whatever his motivation was, Mom was most definitely his favorite target. So there we all were, in Mom and Dad's bedroom, with Mom crouched in the corner of her bedroom, yelling, "Get that creature out of here!" Both dogs were hiding under the bed, while Dad, Laura, and I stood in the doorway, laughing at the scene, but also coaxing Bandit away from his fiery sermon, which he had directed at Mom. He still stood at the foot of the bed and was quite agitated. When we caught our breath from laughing so hard, Dad and I called to Bandit with a firm, "Bandit, come!" He looked once in our direction and once in Mom's before he bounded off the bed to the floor. That, of course, elicited another scream from Mom as he faked one step in her direction, as if to say, "I could sleep here if I really wanted to." And then, as quickly as the dramatic scene had started, it ended. Without another word from anyone, Bandit raced out of the room and headed toward my room. He was, after all, a very smart raccoon. By the time Mom had regained her senses enough to find Bandit and put him outside, he was already sound asleep under my covers. If it's possible for a raccoon to play opossum, he definitely was, probably quite pleased with another successful prank on Mom. Bandit's lesson. I suppose Bandit's big lesson that particular night was to always check under the covers. At least, that's what Mom took from it, as she always checked under the covers after that night. Perhaps the larger lesson was thinking a few steps ahead wherever you are. See the situation you're in, but also see what could be just ahead. Is it an exciting opportunity you might otherwise miss? Or is it a random surprise, like a raccoon under the covers? Our last story today, Dorothy Rosby gives helpful advice from her very own experience. From her book, "I Didn't Know You Could Make Birthday Cake from Scratch, Parenting Blunders from Cradle to Empty Nest," copyright 2016. The chapter, "Picking the Bathroom Lock and Other Lessons of Motherhood." You can put a child to bed, but you can't make him sleep. You can set food before him, but you can't make him eat. And you can lead him to the potty, but you can't make him go. As we near Mother's Day, I can't help but ponder these and other bits of wisdom I've gained since I became a mother 4 years ago. Perhaps my sharing them will benefit other new parents, but probably not. Still, here goes. I've learned that items which have survived countless moves, violent acts of nature, and even burglaries can be shattered in seconds at the hands of a toddler. And I've learned that young children will never use crayons on the furniture again once they've tried permanent markers. I've learned that toddlers can watch the same movie 700 times and never tire of it. What do they think? It's going to end differently? And I've learned it doesn't matter that they can't read. They still know when you're leaving out parts of the story. Since I became a mom, I've acquired some new skills too. I can now do with one hand everything I once did with two. I can make up a bedtime story. I can clean up almost anything without gagging. And I can pick the lock on our bathroom door. I've learned to be more patient. My record is answering 41 why questions before screaming, "Because I said so, that's why." And I think I'm more flexible, too. It doesn't matter how late I am. If my son Isaac just threw up, I deal with it. I've learned to lower my expectations about pretty much everything, including the way I dress, the way my house looks, and the food I eat. I've learned to eat hot dogs, and not just at the ballpark. I can now step over rubbish on the floor without so much as a glance back. And I've gone to work with my stretch pants on backwards. There was a time I wouldn't even wear stretch pants, let alone backwards. Had I never been a mother, I would never have known about sippy cups and wet wipes. I would have never learned how dangerous it is to share pizza with a child while wearing a dry clean only dress, or how, with the right pressure, a 1 ounce packet of salad dressing can get really good coverage in a crowded restaurant. Had I never been a mom, I would never have learned that a solo trip to the grocery store could be such a treat. I would never have known where my church keeps their carpet sweeper and where the bathroom is located in every business within a 5-mile radius of my home. And finally, had I never been a mother, I would have never learned how one little hug from a child can make a mother forgive and forget a multitude of misdeeds. Unfortunately, my son has learned that too. We've run out of time for today's episode of That's a Laugh. We hope you've enjoyed it. Please be sure to listen next time. I'm Jennifer Green, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. That's a Laugh is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any questions or comments about this or any other NCRS shows, please call us at 919-832-5138. Our number one more time is 919-832-5138. We thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.